सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ समस्तजनकल्याणे निरतं करुणामयं नमामि चिन्मयं देवं सद्गुरुं ब्रह्मविद्वरं सद्गुरुं ब्रह्मविद्वरम् ॐ पार्थाय प्रतिबोधितां भगवतां नारायणेन स्वयम् व्यासेन ग्रथितां पुराणमुनिनां मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनी अम्ब त्वामनुसन्दधामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणी यं ब्रह्मा वरुणेन्द्ररुद्रमरुतः स्तुन्वन्ति देव्यैस्तवै वेदैः साङ्गपदक्रमोपनिषदैः गायन्ति यं सामगाः ध्यानावस्थिततद्गतेन मनसा पश्यन्ति यं योगिनः यस्यान्तं न विदुत्सुरासुरगणाः देवाय तस्मै नमः देवाय तस्मै नमः ॐ श्रीगणेशाय नमः ॐ श्रीसरस्वत्यै नमः ॐ श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः
हरि ओम् We are welcoming some new people today. So, we are currently on chapter 8, verse number 13, 14 and 15. I'll just try to briefly summarize in the next few minutes what the previous chapters of the Bhagavad Gita have taught us. So, the Gita starts with Arjuna's questions, Arjuna's grief and delusion in chapter 1, and accepting Bhagavan as his teacher, he asks for answers. And Bhagavan Sri Krishna from the second chapter starts with the highest knowledge that you are not this body, mind and intellect, you are that Atma, you, me and all the kings here, all of us are eternal. And then summarizing the entire teaching of the Bhagavad Gita in the second chapter, Bhagavan tells us in the end about the man of wisdom, Sthita Prajna. The third chapter deals with Karma Yoga, what is unselfish work dedicated to the Lord without worrying about results, without looking at I and mine. And then in the fourth chapter, we heard about the Yajna spirit, how we can work together for the benefit of all, for the benefit of society, sinking our individual differences. Also, the fourth chapter, Bhagavan tells us that every activity can become a prayer. Whether you are eating, whether you are walking, whether you are studying, every activity, you can make it as a devotion or as a prayer to the Lord. And the fifth chapter talks about renunciation, how even while working in this world, I give up the sense of doership, I identify with the Lord within the Atman, the consciousness, and then watch my body, mind, and intellect as activities are going on. That is called karma sannyas. And then in the sixth chapter, the Lord taught us how I, the individual, can connect with the Lord, with the totality, through the path of meditation. The first five chapters talk about me, and the sixth chapter tells us how I, the individual, can connect with Lord, with the totality, through the path of meditation, and that is chapter number six. And from seventh chapter onwards, Bhagwan starts talking about his nature. His nature means what is this total Brahman, this consciousness, who is playing the role of Ishvara, who is playing the role of creator, sustainer, and destroyer. And Bhagwan Shri Krishna says that totality is me. I am manifested here as that total consciousness. And in the seventh chapter, he talks about his lower and higher nature. Lower nature is this Prakriti, this world of matter that we see. And higher nature is the spirit, the consciousness that illumines this whole world. And then Bhagwan Shri Krishna says, also my higher nature as Brahman is above both. I am above Purush and Prakriti both. I am beyond it. And it is my power, my energy that is present as both, as matter and energy. It is me alone. But at the same time, I remain unaffected by what is happening. And then in the seventh chapter, he teaches us how to approach God. He says there are four kinds of devotees. Those who come to me for relief of suffering, or those who want something, or those who come for knowledge. But the most dear to me is the jnani, who approaches me not asking anything but for me, for my sake alone. And then in the eighth chapter, he talks more about himself. What is this Brahman, which is the total consciousness? Kavim Puranam Anushasitaram. He says he is the omniscient, all-powerful, all-pervading consciousness because of which this whole universe is functioning. And then Arjuna has asked, how, O Lord, can I remember you at the time of death? How can we remember you? So Bhagwan Shri Krishna says that whatever has been your predominant thought throughout this life will be your thought at the time of death. So the more time you spend in remembering that higher, more your mind will be purified. And he is telling us about the glory of Om. So today we'll talk about chanting Om and how I can continue to remember the Lord even through all good and bad circumstances, through all good and bad situations. So today we'll start with chapter 8, verse number 13, which he talks about Om.
Om ekakshram brahma vyaharan mam anusmaran.
Vyaharan mam anusmaran.
Yav prayati cha tyajan deham.
Yav prayati tyajan deham.
Sayati paramam gatim.
Sayati paramam gatim.
Together,
Om ite kaksharam brahma vyaharan mam anusmaran yav prayati tyajan deham sayati paramam gatim.
So Bhagwan says Om is iti ekaksharam, is one syllable. Om is one syllable which is actually represents Brahman, represents the total consciousness. Brahman, the totality, is represented by Om. So Om is the sound symbol which tells us about what this Brahman is. And he says that Brahman vyaharan, chanting mam anusmaran. So when you are chanting Om, don't just do it mechanically, but remember me. So when we say Hari Om, you should remember Hari the Lord, or Om Namah Shivaya, or Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So whenever I chant Om, I should remember that Om represents the total consciousness, Brahman. And Mam Anusmaran. Anusmaran means one who continuously remembers me and chants Om. What happens? When such an individual, this individual, prayati, leaves tyajan deham, giving up this body, when this individual leaves, chanting Om and remembering me, sa yati paramam gatim, such an individual reaches the highest, paramam, highest, gatim, the highest goal, the highest achievement in life is accomplished by such an individual. So here this verse glorifies Om, and we'll spend most of this particular verse talking about the glory of Om. So Om can be chanted as Oma, but actually in Sanskrit it is A and U which becomes O and then Ma. So A, U, Ma, that is Om. So A represents the waking state, U represents the dream state, and Ma represents the deep sleep. So the waking, dream, and deep sleep are all three represented in the chanting of Om. Now, how do the rishis come to that is a very long topic. I won't cover that today, but it is covered in detail in the Mandukya Upanishad. So if you are more interested, you can read that, or that would be the best way. So A-U-M, Om, represents the waking, dream, and deep sleep. And when we chant Om, Om, that is followed by silence. And then again you chant Om a second time. So the silence represents the fourth state, which is called the Turiya state, or the state of enlightenment. So in the Mandukya Upanishad, it is said that the fourth state alone is real. All the other three states, the waking, dream, and deep sleep, depend on the fourth state called Turiya, get its origin from that, and ultimately merge into that. So let us see, when we chant Om, there is silence. And then the sound of Om comes and then merges back into silence. So the silence is the substratum on which this entire chanting of Om occurs. Om, like that. So just as silence is there all the time, but Om appears upon it, the sound of Om. So similarly, Bhagavan says that the Turiya state, or the state of consciousness, is the only reality. And this waking, dream, and deep sleep that we see is a projection upon that state of consciousness. So when I chant Om, I should not only pay attention to the sound, but pay attention to the silence which permeates, which supports this chanting of Om. And Om represents the entire visible universe and the invisible consciousness. So that is the significance of Om. In the Mundak Upanishad, there is a very beautiful verse where the path of meditation is explained. Pranavo dhanu sharohi atma brahma tat laksham uchate pramatena vedavyam sharotat tanmayo bhavet. So they say that use pranava, use Om as the bow. So Om is the bow. Just as that an archer, when he's shooting a bow and arrow, what does he do? He pulls his bow tight, and then the aims at the target and lets the arrow go, and the arrow hits the target. And if the target is made out of soft wood or cork, it penetrates the target and becomes one with it. So similarly, Om is the bow, and me, the individuality, is the arrow. My little individuality, this ego that is meditating, in meditation, I use Om as the bow, and I myself am the arrow. And what is the target? The target is Brahma. Brahma tad lakshya muchyate. The Brahman, the consciousness that is not only outside but inside, that is my goal. And just as the archer has full attention, only then he can hit the target. So similarly, they say that when you are meditating, your attention should be fully on the target, on the Lord, the consciousness. And just as the arrow penetrates the target and becomes one with it, so I, the individuality, have to become one with that consciousness. So that is the path of meditation. So using Om as my bow, I can chant and reach that eternal state of consciousness. So they say that all mantras, if you look, everything starts with Om. Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, Om Bhur Bhuva Swaha Tat Savitur Varenyam. So Om is said to be the essence of all the Upanishads. In fact, they say the essence of all Upanishads is the Gayatri Mantra. You know, Om Bhur Bhuva Swaha. And the essence of Gayatri Mantra is Om. So in chanting Om, you can... the entire knowledge of all the Upanishads is covered. And they say the chanting should be continuous. We should get in the habit of chanting within the mind. And that is called a japa japam, where even when I am chanting, I am continuously remembering, and ultimately it should become so automatic that even in my silence, the chanting is going on internally. And such an individual, even if at the time of death or when they are unconscious or asleep, the chanting goes on, and that is called the state of ajapa japam. In fact, Om is said to be the vibration, vibrational energy. The entire universe vibrates at the energy, the frequency of Om. And they say that one who gives up the body, now people may say, if I realize God after I give up my body, what's the use of that? Kya fayda uska? I want to know God right now. So Gurudev Swami Chinmayananda in his commentary says, giving up the body does not mean death, but giving up the ego. The idea that I am this body is what needs to be given up. So even while I am functioning in the world, if we look at the lives of these great Mahatmas, these great prophets and teachers, even while they were working in the world, they had no identification with the body. They identified with that total consciousness and then continued to work in the world. So that is called death of the body. It's not a physical death, but it's the death of the ego. That's what's called tyajan deham tato yati param gatim. And such a person reaches the highest gati, the highest goal, that is oneness with the totality, becoming one with that consciousness. So that's why Bhagavan says that when you give up your body identification, how do you do that? By chanting Om, by remembering me constantly, Anusmaran. Then and then alone you will reach me. Because as we said in the previous verses, that whatever is your predominant thought throughout this life will be your predominant thought at the time of death. So the more time we spend in remembering the Lord, the closer we get. Now, in the next two verses, he will explain a little bit more about what is the path of this reaching God and what is the highest goal. And another point I just wanted to cover, that Om does not only represent the Supreme Consciousness, but also represents Ishvara. So the creator, sustainer and destroyer of this universe is also represented in Om, just as the silence is the creator of the A, U and Ma. So Om not only represents consciousness, but also represents all the gods and all the creator, sustainer, destroyer. Then people say, I am too busy to all the time, you know, chant, all the time remember, all the time meditate. Can you give us an easier path? It's like a person has just graduated, you know, from college and just has got a job, and she goes to the car dealer and she wants to buy a car, and the car dealer first takes her to the Mercedes, Lexus, you know, there's multiple cars, and then he sees that she even shows from her expression, no, no, that's too much for me, I can't buy a Mercedes. He said, oh, okay, I get it, you just graduated. Then he will take her to Kia or, you know, Hyundai or something like that, which is within her scope of. So similarly, we ask God, he said, this is too difficult, this path of knowledge and chanting. Can you give us an easier path, something that we can reach? So Bhagavan says, okay, here is the easier path, here is the Kia, and that is the path of bhakti, which we can all practice.